6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Full Press Coverage Network and CanucksHockeyBlog.com. I am Chris, at Light Force, joined virtually, as always, by the ever-so-witty Anna Forsythe at eForsythe03. Welcome, Anna.
Thanks, Chris. I'm about to undermine what you just said, because ever since you hit record, I'm slightly afraid I'm going to burp, so apologies if that happens.
We are.
Yeah. Sorry, well, I drank a lot of water.
The thing about this, though, is that I could edit it out in post, but there's a part of me, there's a small part of me that's like...
You're not going to. You wouldn't.
What? Not edit or edit?
You would. You wouldn't edit. You'd keep it in for sure.
I don't know. I'm not that brutal. I mean, it depends. Like, if it had some serious effect, like if the timing was perfect, it'd be like, that sucker's got to stay in. Because it would generate a reaction from us. Yeah. And I have this, do I cut the reaction out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
so, apologies,
man,
if it does happen, everyone.
Yeah, well, speaking of burping, the Vancouver Canucks burped out a win since we last recorded a show, which, you know, has saved the day. Things are good. Everything's wonderful.
I mean, I didn't see it, so if the tree falls in the forest...
No one's around, does it make a sound? Yeah.
I mean, I realized that there are a lot of people that did see it, but I didn't, so.
Yeah. I went to my first game in a long, long time.
Yeah, you did.
Which was an experience. We can talk about that in a little bit and rewind. You've been going to games. You're just like, you know, out there living life. That's more than me. It's like,
yeah, it's fun.
That's 100% more games than I've been to.
Using your fancy stats to get at me.
Yes. You got the fanciest of stats. That's what I use here on C4. Mm-hmm. Right. I remember I used to try to pitch this idea that when we were blogging at Canucks Hockey Blog, we needed a CHB counts to three article. And like back in the day, it's still kind of this way. Like you have like the armies, obviously, but Pasitabulis, they had, I watched this game. Which I don't think Daniel still does to the extent that he and Harrison did back in the day.
Okay, but it's still a thing.
And no, I know,
the
but like,
six pack in Daily Hive.
Yeah, the like the CHB thing was TGAT, the game according to Twitter, which then started to, which was interesting. It got copied. Prior to that, there really wasn't like copies. There was always their own sort of twist. Mm-hmm. But I think what TGAT did is it proved a appetite. And, you know, ultimately, TGAT, I would say, is what spawned the provies.
Right. I mean, that was a thing, though. Like, people like seeing their tweets, you know, in an article. They like being validated that way. So,
yeah. But
if you made the provies, that was...
Well, and that was the thing. Yeah, if you made the provies, it was great. And for a while, if you made tea, like people would actually want TGAT like immediately post game, similar to what they wanted with the armies. Mm-hmm. And it became more and more difficult because Liz Moffitt, who sort of floated this idea, came with it and started to run with it, wasn't always available for every game. And then every so often you'd get me doing a TGAT. So we had different people, different writers contributing to it.
Back in the day, I used to, like, I'm sure I, like, took it from TGAT and the Provies and the Six Pack, but, like, that was my little blog. Was kind of centered around, like, I would do, like, sections per period, but, like, definitely be using tweets as the main basis of it. I was writing at, like, 3 a.m, 4 a.m.
Well, we weren't doing any of that because, you know, Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Back to CHB counts to three, though. The idea with the segment was to defer to all the actual analytics and fancy stats that you would get out of Canucks Army at the time, And what we would present is like the crazy math, similar to in TGAT. Like if we dropped a number, it was like the number of times Louis Erickson yawned on the bench or something like
right.
that. Like that was the idea, is just to, you know, have some fun. But JJ wasn't keen on it, because I think he always wanted CHB to be not like so serious, but, you know, to that extent. But where I always found that people sort of resonated was on the aloof, because we never took ourselves so seriously.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, I would write fancy stance articles if I could, but I can't. So, like, no one would come to my Twitter account and expect to see that.
The fanciest of stats. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, no, let's start talking a little bit about the week that was for the Vancouver Canucks. One might argue the Vancouver Canucks haven't had the most fanciest of stats in their last few weeks, let alone the week that currently was. They obviously had themselves in a predicament. They came home to a relatively hostile environment, having put up a couple of sevens on the road, followed by a five. And
the wrong way.
And with Colorado being the first game at home, having already, you know, embarrassed the Vancouver Canucks down in Denver, one might be forgiven to think that the Vancouver Canucks were up in a bad place. But I want to actually point out they weren't that horrible for most of that game.
I would agree with you, actually. I think most people, when the first Colorado goal went in, sort of thought, here we go. But they did settle down, and for most of it, it wasn't that bad. But, you know, the end result was still the same, because it just sort of slowly deteriorated, right?
Yeah, because like the Vancouver Canucks actually had themselves a lead in this game, which was crazy. Like, oh my God, the Vancouver Canucks can actually get a lead on a really good team. You had Connor Garland score his goal in the second. Tucker Pullman scores one early in the third. It's like, oh my goodness, things are turning around. But see, it's not at least a statistic that one would argue is all that fancy. Their power play, or sorry, not their power play, their penalty kill is down into the, I was going to say in the 50s, but I actually think it's in the 60s, which is still a number that's unheard of.
It's still very bad.
And, you know, you'd think that a team like the Avalanche is not a team you'd go and purposefully take dumb penalties against. But no, the Vancouver Canucks were like, yeah, man, I want to take dumb penalties here, and let me do so. Like in the third period.
Let us do them in pairs.
Yes. You know, you got Chiasson, who took just a horrible penalty against Johnson, followed by JT Miller taking another dumb penalty. Like
Miller takes a lot of dumb penalties, let's be real.
I'm willing to forgive the Chiasson penalty, but it was dumb. Mm-hmm. But then to see the Miller penalty was like all sorts of levels of dumb. Now, in fairness, it was on the goal, and so thankfully the referees were like, no, we'll even it up. We understand how Vancouver is in a bad space. But Quinn Hughes is like, whoa, man. My turn.
I know. And Quinn looks so sad whenever he takes a penalty that it's hard to be annoyed, but
it was so brutal. Yeah, it's like, brutal. You know, I get this. It's like, I have been aggrieved and the referees aren't going to protect me. So gosh darn it, I'm going to go protect myself and spend 2 minutes considering the fault in my ways, presuming they give me that long.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before a bit, like how the inconsistencies in refereeing kind of leads to renegade vigilante justice. But I think at this point, you have to take some personal responsibility to not make dumb decisions.
Yeah. And Quinn's cross-check was dumb. Like, it's not like take a number, get him back later. It's like, see what number it is and go and put my stick into his back.
Yeah.
Right in front of the referee. Just so that, and like, not in a scrum. The puck's not here. I'm just going to go and take my two. Yeah. And that let the proverbial arrow to the sails. Unfortunately for the Vancouver Canucks at that point, Colorado gets the lead back and you know, they hold on to it going into a 4-2 win. So then we see the Jets come into town. And here is where the Vancouver Canucks are finding themselves an opponent that arguably is one that they should be able to beat. And, you know, they did, kind of.
I mean, they did.
I know.
Not but just like, kind of.
Like, the thing about this, though, is that the Canucks made it a whole lot more interesting than probably the game should have been. And had it not been for heroic goaltending, which apparently is a theme with this Vancouver Canucks team, there is a good chance that game goes into overtime.
I know. It's funny. Like, please tell me, because I was not able to watch. From the highlights, it seemed like Vancouver were pretty comfortable at some point. Yes. And then, yeah. Okay. So that was a
good reading. Yeah, no, the Vancouver Canucks were, like, for all intents, they were in control. Yes, they were reliant on, you know, Thatcher Demko, which is interesting enough to note that Thatcher, in a 3-2 game, is the first star.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, if you look at the two goalies right there, like, Winnipeg do not have two all-star goalies. They have one excellent goalie. Mm-hmm. And then they have quite a drop-off. So, to be fair, Canucks, like, saw the weakness and took it.
Well, yes. But this is where, like, were the Canucks comfortable? Yes. Were they in control for the most part? Yes, they were. What hurt them? Well, a pretty dumb mistake that led to the first goal from Nikola Ehlers.
Yeah, we're never going to forget that whole not picking Ehlers thing, are we?
But the Vancouver Canucks did what they needed to do to get the 2 points. Where I think they need to do better is that despite Winnipeg being a team that they should have been able to handle well, and they somewhat did, the Vancouver Canucks almost put themselves into cruise control where it's like, oh, we're good enough to do that. This Canucks team is not good enough to go into cruise control.
Good point. Good way of
putting it. And that's where, taking their foot off the gas and allowing sort of the game to drive itself was the worst thing that they could do. And when Dubois goes and notches that second Jets goal late in the third period, Winnipeg suddenly is like blood in the water, full on attack. And Thatcher Demko was the difference. Good teams, good goaltending get you wins. I understand that. It's just, that can't always be the only thing.
Yeah. But Chris, our local hero scored his first goal, not just for Vancouver, but in the league. So how can you hate on that narrative?
Burrows.
He's
Burrows wearing Burrows.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't really slay the dragon. It was the dragon more like being
NHL goals.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, you know, he tickled the gecko.
No, that sounds terrible. Oh God, please never say that again.
This is. Okay. You know how long this list of Chris don't say this thing again is?
Today it's been track of all of it. Quite a few. If anyone watched IOTA, I already had to say that quite a few times. But yeah, I guess the point is that they won, and Canucks winning ugly is still a win, and that's something to be treasured at this point.
Is it fair to say, though, that the win bought the regime time? Like, in a team we know that goes and looks at things day by day, everything, the ship was righted, the water had all been bailed out, boat was, you know,
I think
back on track.
This regime is going to, you know, ownership is going to make excuses for Jim Benning, like, over and over. And even moving on to Chicago, as we're about to talk about, you could say, oh, it's just one goal game. Like, it was very close. Like, Canucks hit all those posts. We should have won. Like, you can, at this point, they're going to skew the narrative to justify whatever they want to do.
Yeah. Well, okay. I actually agree. The Vancouver, like, having been at that game in the building.
Yes.
Which, like, I've described it on Twitter. It felt weird. And some of that was, obviously, it was the first event that I've been to since the pandemic. I still have sort of that internal anxiety. The energy felt weird in the building. It wasn't like it once was. And I think that might be a fair assessment, whether, you know, the team is doing well or not. It's just a different energy. But what was shocking to me was when I looked at the statistics to see how well the Vancouver Canucks did, because that's not how I felt. And I think it was maybe it was Daniel, but someone had said how when you looked at the chances, Chicago actually had more sort of high impact opportunities than the Vancouver Canucks did, despite the Canucks hitting posts, making Fleury work, and dominating in shots in two out of the three periods. So I agree. The Vancouver Canucks, you know, should have, quote unquote, won the game. They played well enough to do so. But when you're not a good team, I don't feel you can use that excuse. Oh, well, that one didn't go our way. What about the five others that didn't go your way because you weren't in it, right? Like, it's a good team can use that because, you know, those games happen.
Yeah. I would say that sometimes you run into a hot goalie and puck luck goes against you. That happens. But the fact that Chicago looked as bad as they did at times and throughout the season have not looked good. That was the end of a back-to-back against Edmonton.
Where they'd given up seven, which the Canucks know full well.
Yeah. What it feels like. They were tired. That team is not a good team.
But here's the thing. They were tired. They were down to five defensemen early in the first.
Yep.
And the Vancouver Canucks,
they literally are like shooting themselves in the foot at that point, like causing their own injuries.
Yeah. But the Vancouver Canucks couldn't take advantage of it. Now, yeah, you might say again, oh, well, wait a minute. Math was the difference. Yeah,
he was good. He
was definitely on top of his game. Yes, he had some puck luck with the positioning as he had the post to help him out for, three attempted shots?
Right.
But I think the epitome of what the game felt like, there was a two-on-one opportunity on the penalty kill that the Vancouver Canucks turned into absolutely nothing. Like, it was like two backwards passes before the play got broken up.
Right.
They couldn't even dump it into the corner. They didn't get a shot on net. And that's the thing, is that when given an opportunity, the Vancouver Canucks could not take advantage of it. There were a few moments where they had an opportunity and they couldn't do anything with it.
Yeah. And Daniel's talked a bit about this in his post game. And I think Sportsnet flashed this up as one of their fancy stats. Just the level of like breakouts is so bad for the Canucks. Mm-hmm. Their transitional game is just non-existent. Their defense into offense is just not happening. So as weak as we, you know, say that their actual defense is, it's also hampering their offense because, yeah, Tyler Myers just charging the net any opportunity is not transition game.
The one thing I will give Vancouver credit for was they actually looked like they were in control on the penalty kill, which has, again, been an Achilles heel of theirs as of late. One, Chicago did not score on the power play, despite scoring the one goal. But, you know, the Vancouver Canucks, I don't think Chicago really ever had a true opportunity when they had the man advantage, and they had multiple opportunities in the game. But what drives me nuts, I think, just looking at this game sort of in the bigger picture, how is it that the team that's extremely tired in a 0-0 game is the one that dominates the final period?
Yeah.
Like, that I do not understand. Like, the Vancouver Canucks were throwing pucks left, right, and center. At one point, I think they had outshot Chicago something like 24-9, I think it was, after two periods.
Right.
No, sorry. It was it was 30-13 after two periods. And yet in the final frame, it's 11-10. Now you might say, Chris, you're grasping at straws here. Chicago should not be the team that's getting those extra shots. You've controlled them so long. Like, what is it that changed? You should be also getting just as many opportunities and yet didn't. It is so weird. And I don't know how you fix that. I actually don't know. I don't understand why the Vancouver Canucks are the team that gets outshot in the third period of this game.
Yeah, I mean, good teams find a way to stay in games, right? So even...
Well, the Blackhawks are not a good team.
No. I'm more pointing out that Canucks, if they're a good team, would find a way to stay in that game.
But, well, this is the weird thing, though, is that it was never out of hand. Like, that Chicago goal, prior to that Chicago goal, which it was essentially a, I don't really say a mistake, a lost face-off and a puck that came through 400 people on the way to the net.
Face-offs.
Right? Yeah, you can only fix one thing at a time, and they're currently working on the penalty kill. But I don't get it. Like, once you're down and the game gets away, like, you, because you're taking more risks. I could see that. Like, if the Chicago Blackhawks scored one early in the first or something, or maybe in the second, you could see the Canucks making some maybe high risk plays that ultimately backfire. I could see that, but that's not what this was. The Vancouver Canucks, it's like, as soon as the goal went in the net, it's like, oh, well, and maybe that was the case. Like, I've talked about it on the show where every time someone goes and throws Luongo under the bus for the Stanley Cup final, the dude pitches three shutouts and those are the only three wins.
Yeah.
That's not telling you that the goaltending is the problem. That's actually telling you quite the opposite. And I wonder if this is somewhat the case, is that the Canucks almost feel that they need their goaltender to pitch a shutout, or they need to get many goals before the one goes in. And when the one goes in, they're suddenly like, eh.
See, yeah, that's the thing. The only one of the encouraging things I've seen on Canucks, the garbage fire that is Canucks Twitter, is that no one seems to be blaming Hlak for the losses he's involved with, because I think it's so obvious that the offense just isn't there for him.
Well, I mean, Hlak could pitch a shutout, and if he doesn't score that goal, he doesn't have a hell, right? It's just, it's a weird situation that the Vancouver Canucks find themselves in. And, you know, based on the scuttlebutt, which we'll get into later in the show, one that they have no idea how it even happened. So,
yeah, that's the scary thing, is that, you have to like identify the issues, and they can't even agree on that. So,
yeah. Speaking of other things that I can't explain why it happened, I noticed that at the Blackhawks game that there was much less Finn and far more Crazy P, and that takes us into our new segment that I have still yet to go and build a drop for, Game Changers. And Anna, just to talk about the game changer you had explained here in the rundown, you propose that we ban all human or human-like mascots, not just from the NHL, from all pro sports.
So, yes. If you joined us for IOTA, if you're a patron of ours, and if you're not, you should be. We did have a brief conversation about mascots. I didn't want to get too deep into it because I knew I'd be talking about it here. Human mascots are terrifying. Any human-like mascot. The main one I'm thinking of here is Jack the Giant from
Vancouver Giants.
Vancouver Giants. He is terrifying. Like, he looks like a human, but he's mascot size because he's a giant, I guess. But he looks just so oddly proportioned. And honestly, one Valentine's Day, they did this video where he asked out his lady giant friend, and then there was like mascot kissing, and it was just so disturbing. So,
well, you obviously didn't stay for the Vancouver Giants after hours stream.
Yeah, that's the thing. I was just like, this should be kid friendly. I don't know what's happening here. But especially as they had, like, the Giants were, like, helping him win his lady friend, and it's just, like, no. But
they went out to the farmyard in the back where they had all sorts of brown chickens and brown cows. Brown chicken, brown cow, brown chicken, brown cow.
Grim.
Anyway, sorry. The fact that you brought that up, I had to drop that joke.
Okay.
It's this kind of show. It's what's happening. Canucks aren't doing so hot, and we're just going loony. But we're still positive. They're making the playoffs all the way. Stanley Cup's ours.
Goes down, et cetera, et cetera.
Left on, yeah.
But ban that. Yeah. Ban Mr. Baseball. Like, why is he human? Why is he a baseball with a human face?
Okay, I just want to point out, we're not talking about the movie, are we? We're talking about the mascot.
The mascot. Is that, he is called that, right? Mr. Baseball? The Mets?
The Mets, I think it's, I always thought it was Mr. Met.
Oh, well, maybe it's Mr. Baseball. Met.
I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah. UP, terrifying.
Okay.
Like,
so
what is UP?
That's a human-like mascot? I mean, so, like, UP is essentially Gritty.
No. You think so? I mean,
well, I'm not saying they're the same, but if you're going to say UP needs to be banned, are we banning Gritty? Is Gritty a human-like mascot?
No, Gritty is a creature. Gritty's Gritty.
So is UP. If you could tell me if UP's a human, get out of town. I mean, UP's as human as Harvey the Hound is.
No. Although Harvey the Hound is also disturbing, but he doesn't fit under.
On the note of Harvey the Hound, my problem is that he's a mascot for, well, I mean, UP is as well, but Harvey the Hound is a mascot for more than one professional sports team in Calgary.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't.
He shows up at Stampeders games. He shows up at Flames games. I wouldn't be surprised if he shows up at, like, Calgary Hitmen games.
I mean, yeah, I guess.
And I'm not talking about, like, you know, that one appearance. I'm talking about on the reg.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but maybe that's a budgetary thing. But I would say I much more said by Hunter, who is, like, a weird, like, they try and make him sexy. And I'm like, no, he's a lynx. So I want to ban Hunter as well, but. Because they're trying to give him human-like qualities.
I was going to say, you've gotten so far away from the human or human-like part here. This is all the mascots Anna doesn't like and wants to ban.
But
on Game Changers,
I would be interested to hear from our listeners. Like, please talk to us on Twitter or Discord. Is UP not human-like? He's like a giant or some kind of troll creature, but he's human-like.
Next thing you're going to tell me, you want to get rid of the Grinch and during the holiday games and what have you.
The Grinch uniforms for the Giants are awesome, and I've said that before. But
I know
Grinch is creepy. Oh, but yeah, mainly, like, my main concern is Jack the Giant, honestly. So if we can just ban Jack the Giant, I'll be, like, slightly happier. Well,
there goes any opportunity that Jack the Giant joins us on an upcoming episode of the show. But you know what? I need to take a break here. You have rocked me to my core with these, you know, mascot suggestions that you want to get rid of. So that's what we're going to do. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy.
Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
Hey. So now that we've got that mascot bashing out of our system, let's start bashing ownership and management. Or is that what we're going to do here? Because can you explain to me how many meetings one needs to have before, I don't know, something more than another meeting?
I don't know, at least one in public in a coffee shop.
Okay. That's my feeling is one, blown out of proportion. And then two, I don't really care. Like, I understand that there are some that do, and I will never sort of call into question someone's passion that carries meaning. But Anna, like, what's not to suggest you and I go out for a drink and someone takes a picture and they, like, they infer that there's, you know, podcast planning hijinks or drama, or better yet, let's say I meet up with Clay and have a Diet Coke with him and someone takes a picture. Are they going to suddenly think, you know, Clay's coming back? Like, I feel that that's when we as a fan base are starting to really grasp at things. I don't fault us for doing so, because let's look at the organization and the amount of transparency and actual ability to communicate that doesn't exist.
That's the thing. Well, you're not wrong. I mean, I should be so lucky that you cross the river to come see me, but back into civilization. But the lack of communication and the lack of action is what causes people to speculate. And it's what it's representative of, right? Because we were talking about this in Discord today, but how do we see it getting better when the ownership is so intent on inserting themselves into, like, operations at this club? Mm-hmm. If we got a different GM, if we got a different coach, one, we still have all the contracts and all that comes with that, but do we see it getting better under this ownership? That's the tricky part.
But that's, like, ownership. I mean,
that is ownership, but Canucks do have a special reputation in that regard.
Oh, I'm certain they do. I've spoken to enough people, and not to suggest that I'm all that connected, but I do know a couple of people. That is the general consensus. Now, Vancouver is not the only team in the NHL that has this sort of, you know, I guess a story written about them, but they are in Canada, where that actually means something much more significantly than it does if you happen to be south of the border. But ownership's not going to change. Like, we're sort of, as fans, at some point need to accept that the family owns the team, and until such time as the family no longer wants to own the team, they'll continue to own the team. Like, I see the campaigns of sell the team. So long as people continue to buy tickets and buy merchandise, why would they? And if there's any more land to develop around that rink?
That's the thing. I mean, like, it's the jewel in the Aquilini crown. You know, crown of thorns it may be, but it's going to be the last thing they let go of, realistically. If the pandemic didn't, it definitely damaged their portfolio, let's say. But if that didn't lead them to selling the team, I can't see anything else.
I was chatting with someone after the game last night, and we were sort of talking about, you know, my feelings about ownership. Like, and again, please don't understand. Don't take this like, oh, Chris hates on people who say sell. No, I mean, you have every right to just say whatever the heck you want and cheer this team however which way you want to. But I don't see how saying sell the team is going to motivate the ownership from selling the team. But the one thing that I could see as being an issue here is the overextension of an operation. When the Griffiths family built Rogers Arena, while, yes, I'm maybe oversimplifying things, they overextended. They actually found themselves in a position where they needed an injection of cash. And that's when they found John McCaw as someone who would. And then ultimately, John McCaw bought the Griffiths completely out of the picture. Now, with McCaw, we had our absentee owner, the one who may or may not have been aware that he owns sports franchises.
Yeah, I mean, as an Arsenal fan, that sounds familiar. Silent Stan Kroenke, the current Avs owner, but yeah.
And as a fan, I recall many people, oh man, I wish the owner actually cared about this team. And what happened? John McCaw found someone who
careful what cared you wish about for.
The team, right? Like, you know, I don't know what to say. Like, I would much rather have an Aquilini than a McCaw, in so much that, but I completely see the problems that are then presented. It's just different problems. Like when McCall was here, he had hired someone who essentially came out of the private world to manage the sports franchises. And I think I've shared the story on the show at the time, but or not at the time because we didn't have the show, but before, when they went and relieved Pat Quinn of his duties, they, because Pat was like the NHL governor, the president, the GM, like Pat was everything. When they relieved him of his duties, they had no real idea of everything that he was in charge of and managing. And so they approached Pat Quinn to say, I am so sorry, but can you come back on a contract? And Pat Quinn told them, apparently in no uncertain terms, no thank you. Though I believe the language he had used was not.
He didn't say thank you?
He didn't say thank you, exactly. That's part of the problem. Now you have the Aquilini family. They probably know, you know, everything that Jim's doing because, you know, it's possible that Francesco might be doing some of it or politely suggesting or who knows what. But when we look at the situation that they're in right now, it's difficult for me as a fan who, again, I'm not pro-Benning. I think it's very clear. I have expressed the desire to actually do a full rebuild, not a retool, reset. No, now we're ahead of schedule or whatever the heck you might want to call it. But when I look across the league, I can't see another general manager, the guy in charge who has had this type of performance last as long as they have. Like teams who've been in all sorts of trouble have made changes at this level. They might not have gotten out of trouble, but they're trying. And I don't know what the Vancouver Canucks are doing. And now let's say to your point,
sorry,
they make those changes. Coach doesn't fix the problem.
Yeah.
You bring in a new GM. I don't see how a new GM can fix what they have with what they have. Like the sad part is I think if a change occurs, it's what Chris has wanted all along. The button is pressed. It says reset. And that means the last 8 years are ultimately for naught.
Yeah. Which, I mean, considering we have, you know, two of the most talented players in the league currently under contract, just makes you want to scream. I will say that, yeah, who knows if the Canucks know what they're doing, what their next move is. Like, we hear a change.
Well, Elliot Friedman today was talking about...
That like, was exactly my point, though. Like, Elliot, like, he went on Donny and Darley, and it basically seemed like, one, they woke him up, if we're going by his hair. But two, like...
Yeah.
If you didn't know Elliot Friedman, you'd think he hadn't prepared for this interview, because he was saying... Oh, the Canucks might change their GM. They might change their coach. They might do a big trade. Like, something's got to give. But what? But if you know Elliot Friedman, like, he's got his ground. He has great sources. He just, like, clearly the Canucks don't know what their next move is.
Well, and I believe, I don't know if it was him or someone else, but it actually might have been Friedman on 31 Thoughts. The discussion of how people internally are starting to go in and essentially find someone to hop in a foxhole with, or as it's more aptly been referred to, they're Game of Thronesing themselves. Like, everyone's picking a side, and at some point in time, there will be a second Red Wedding. And
I mean, when you said Game of Thrones, I was just like, they're sleeping with their cousin? Like,
oh, I hope not.
I hope not, too, but... That's
not here to judge, but I hope not.
About as much as I know about Game of Thrones.
Well, was it Beast Mode on Twitter? I saw someone tweet this out. Just like Game of Thrones, the eighth season wasn't that good. And it ended after that. I mean,
yeah.
Though I would argue Game of Thrones was really good for a period of time. And the Canucks have not had that really good for a period of time. They had the bubble.
Yeah. It was a blip.
Yeah. And we talked about it last episode. How much did the bubble put the Canucks in the position they are in now?
Yeah, I think we've talked about a few things that kind of set the franchise back, and I would say I've talked about this before, but number one was the myth that they lost the Stanley Cup final because they weren't tough enough.
That's before Game of Thrones aired.
That was before Game of Thrones. So that's previous regime, but obviously led to this regime coming into power. Is that Game of Thrones? I don't know. I'm lost. I won't even try and continue Game of Thrones analogy. Is this the House of Stark now? I don't know.
No, this would be...
when do the dragons come back and burn everything to the ground?
So I don't know, actually, now that we've really taken this one off the rails. I think the Benning regime... The Benning regime's, I would say, more Lannister, or if there's if there's a marriage involved, it's a Baratheon that's really a Lannister, using family names. I don't think House of Stark is Lawrence Gilman, and I don't know who follows Gilman. It's hard because there's all these different families and intricacies that all work interconnected in the books and the TV show that it's difficult to do in the hockey sense. But I think Lawrence Gilman got one season in this regime before he didn't figure things out until too late. And he got, undercut. Wisebrod, he's mm-hmm. the hand of the king, right? He's the one who helped probably, undercut to Gilman. I don't know where Lyndon fits into the picture here. But maybe Lyndon was part of the Gilman connection. So there's Robb Stark, and that was Lyndon Red Wedding.
Could be Richard Madden, because, charming, good looking. Hmm. Left the show way too soon. But anyway, as I said, that was a huge myth that set the franchise back. And then the sort of joint myths of the bubble and St. Louis winning the Stanley Cup from being last in the standings, both of those things together have not been good for the Canucks. It's just false dawns,
Well, and that's the thing. I genuinely wonder, did they have a plan longer than day to day that the bubble gave them the false belief that they were ahead of schedule?
Possibly.
Right. Could that plan have, again, that probably was well overdue, been then derailed, and now suddenly they're in the same position they are in now? I don't know. To those who suggest, you got to be in it to win it, a team that, finishes eighth in their conference can still win the Stanley Cup. Yeah, damn straight, but that doesn't mean they're a good team. And, okay, I'll concede, I would take a cup from a bad team, but the odds are stacked against you, and that's where... the analytics crowd had the Vancouver Canucks barely finding their way into the playoffs, if they even got there. And this came out, through Friedman, where internally the Vancouver Canucks looked at sort of what the analytics were telling them. They're like, no, we don't agree with that. And then suddenly it's like, how are we where we are right now? All the signs were pointing to us being good. Yeah, the signs you were writing for yourself.
Yeah.
Hey, what did you think about the Benning presser?
I mean, it wasn't his worst one, but it wasn't good.
Well,
I think the one in the offseason might be his worst one.
Oh, yeah. But people, I get why it's like, you can't continue to trot Green out and you need the guy in charge. Benning, it's just not he's not comfortable. It's not a space that he wants to be in. He's not articulate enough to communicate through that medium. And, Mike Gillis was never comfortable in front of the microphone, but he was able to articulate himself maybe too well, right? Yeah. And I saw someone comment where people were on Benning, man, why this isn't good. It wasn't bad. This isn't good. It's like, Mike Gillis, would talk. He was on every week talking to the media, talking down to fans. Mike Gillis was not going on the mic to talk down to fans. It's how we as fans equated what he was saying. Again, not necessarily a strength of his. But I kind of feel that at this point in time, in the 8 years we've had, Why are we getting upset when Benning has bad pressers?
I mean, it's true in a way. Like, what answer would he come up with that would satisfy us? Like,
well, like
we messed up. I'm starting again.
Won't say.
Which he won't say. Like but
question, like, what do you think about the fire of Benning? It's upsetting. He's not going to say, yeah, I totally get it. Like,
I mean, he did say, to be fair, he did say, I understand the frustration. I think there's...
We're upset too.
Yeah. Mismatch at some point, which the media, maybe because they haven't really gotten the opportunity properly, but I think if you're in hockey, like, you're in a high-paying job, it's, you have to take that with that, that's high risk. I don't think people...
Well...
I may not go into a game and chant fire Benning, but I'm definitely not upset.
Well, I've made it very clear. I will never suggest that someone should lose their job. Like, I'm not going to go and say Benning should lose his job.
Okay. Yeah.
Or I
think we do differ there. I would say, yes, I suggest that.
Well, okay. But like when I, but I, do I believe he could? Yes. Like the, to me, I'm never going to go and say this person should be fired. Cause like, I feel that I save that. I reserve that for much more egregious issues.
Yeah. I mean, the thing
is, that makes sense.
Yeah.
He's not been, I don't think he's been effective. Like if I'm the CEO, I'm the one doing the review. I, at this point in time, struggle to understand how the performance matches with continued employment. Like I can see that from the business perspective, but I'm on the outside looking in. And so I think that's where I have difficulty.
Yeah.
That, like, again, I'm not trying to say you're wrong. I totally get that. I think we are on the same page. It's just,
I just think from at least now I'm at the point where, you know, when you're suggesting that someone lose their job, he's still going to get paid.
Oh yeah!
Into a McDonald's and say that the manager there should lose their job because the ice cream machine won't work, that's quite a big, you know, jeopardy for that person.
And I'm not trying to correlate the
no, I know you're, two at all. You're not. I'm just saying, like, if you're suggesting, yeah, like a high paid executive should lose their job when they, you know, they're going to continue to get paid either way, it's not. Yeah. Yeah.
And I am by no means trying to even suggest that that's the case. I just, like, yeah, what's going to happen if he were to lose his job tomorrow? There is a parachute on his back that many people, most people, do not even have access to in even not dissimilar circumstances. Mm-hmm. I don't think if you and I in our day-to-day job were to have had the same level of performance.
Wouldn't have lasted 8 years, that's for sure.
Yeah, I don't think. Right. Like, I don't, and if we did, I can't imagine our business would still be around. Right. Cause you can't have that type of performance. And that's the thing that I don't quite understand. But then I start to look at this as like, okay, well, I mean, who knows if and when it'll change, what's going on. And ultimately the people who own the team get to make that call. Back to the service presser though. I mean, I was just trying, like, to me, he's a poor communicator.
Yep.
The Vancouver Canucks need someone. They need, like, hell, they'd be better off having an AGM that could be a better communicator.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about this before. Like, we've got Chris Gear, who is a contract specialist. I don't even think he has the hockey specialty to be behind the scenes, like, management guy. He's, mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's not someone you want to throw out either. We've talked about this also in Discord. Like, if Travis gets fired, who does he get replaced by? Like,
well, I've said, you know, it's King, but people are like, oh, that makes no sense.
That was the other,
or Baumgartner. Sorry, yeah, Baumgartner. I mean, sorry, mm-hmm. Bomber, and people, that makes no sense. Like, oh, okay, like anything the Vancouver Canucks do does make sense. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that as much as Aquilini likes to insert himself, he also, like, is depending on Jim and John to tell him what's going on. And they say, yes, we're going to fix it. Or, yes, like, a trade's going to fix it.
That's the scary part. It's not.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? Actually, hey, if it does, prove me wrong. Prove us all wrong.
Don't dad Jim to make a trade, because he will.
I know, but like he, as much as I might suggest he listens to the show, he hasn't figured out how to get us up on the Google or on the Alexa yet.
Yeah. I don't think he knows how podcasts work, so luckily for us.
Well, I don't know. Apparently you had scuttlebutt that there were podcasts that weren't going to get ad buys anymore or something like that. Until Matt Sicaris came out and said, well, that wasn't us. But
yeah. And I don't think...
But I don't think you and I have to worry about it.
I mean, one, we don't, obviously. But yeah, I don't think anyone in town is, like, really trying to, you know... You can't lie, right? There's still reporters. I know there's house radio, but...
Well, even house radio is turning. Like, to me, yeah. When house radio starts to turn, you know, you have to know you have a problem. And to simply equate that to feeling that that's an unfair assessment, we're talking about 8 years. And if there has been something that has been consistent over these 8 years, is that the internal ability to assess has somehow been skewed. And if you were to suggest that, well, injuries are the problem, it can't always be the problem. There's always this excuse and it's, oh, woe is us. You know, the pandemic is the only one that I might even provide a flyer on.
And even then, like, everyone's had to deal with the pandemic. Plenty of people have lost their jobs quite unfairly over the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You've had plenty of time before that to prepare, to give some kind of wiggle room that...
We take things day by day.
Yeah. Well... That's not a reality. Like, we can't just keep living in a different reality just for Jim Benning.
Yeah. Speaking of taking things day by day, the Vancouver Canucks are as they hit the road as well. This road trip, I think, is going to be the defining factor as to what happens moving forward.
I mean,
you see them off
game against Boston in the road trip. That might be a moment.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're out east, Pittsburgh, Columbus, Boston, Montreal, Ottawa. They've got, like, I mean, I don't know how we can look at the math a number of different ways. But when they play on Wednesday against Pittsburgh, night off, Columbus on Friday, night off, and then they play Boston, Montreal, night off on the Tuesday, and then they play the Sens, three games in 4 nights. Taking it back to Columbus, you've got 4 games over the course of 6. So whole lot of hockey happening, and while yes, they've got some games there that they might be able to produce points in, ain't nothing predictable about this Vancouver Canucks team unless you're betting on them to lose, which again, we're not. This team's going to the playoffs, they're winning the cup, Parego's against Georgia.
We don't know.
Turns left at the art gallery.
How it's happening, but it's going to happen.
Just make a couple trades. This is, you know, this is actually the scariest thing about all of this. Jim Benning announces that they're calling GMs, and which I'm sure he is. He's probably calling GMs before he announces it. But the Canucks are in disarray. I can't imagine there's another team out there that's looking at Vancouver saying, yeah, we'll be reasonable.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm sure they're, you know, eagerly picking up the phone to Jim Benning. Desperate Jim. Like, 100%, what do you got for us?
Hey, Jim, we've got a farm here. We want Petey, but we're going to give you... a farm, a literal farm.
Yeah.
I mean, wouldn't that be something? You know, Canucks' new practice facility, the farm.
Yeah, I will say my roommate finds it hilarious that they're called the AHL teams are called the farm teams. And I was just like, I had to explain that it's not just because it's in Abbotsford. Like, that's every single team gets called the farm team.
Using that actually as a segue as we look to wrap up our show, the Vancouver Canucks have been directing their 50-50 ticket jackpots towards the victims of the flooding here in BC, but more specifically in Abbotsford and the Fraser Valley. And it warms my heart to see the jackpots as high as they have been.
Yep.
The jackpot last night, Sunday, was $25 short of $640K. The two nights before that, over $800,000 was the jackpot, with half of it again going. And I we're hard on the Vancouver Canucks, but there is a lot that they do well when it comes to finding ways to support within the community.
Yeah.
And I think that they need to be recognized, like, you know, whether it be, you know, the Canucks for Kids Fund, Canuck Place, Canucks Autism Network.
Which I will say, like, give huge credit to the Acronyms for that.
Yeah, they have really looked at ways to invest within the community. This is another opportunity. But for those of you who are potentially impacted, I know our listeners are from all over.
Yeah.
You know, let us know if there's anything that we as sort of our own C4 community can do to assist. I can't imagine, you know, what people are going through. Yeah. It's so surreal. What's taken place this past year weather-wise and how it's impacted so many people, whether it be the heat dome in the summer, the forest fires and wildfires that decimated much of the province and literally wiped Lytton off a map, and how now, you know, the flooding that has, you know, taken lives, on top of the fact it's taken livings, but like people's lives figuratively away from them too. Like,
yeah, it's really honestly heartbreaking to see the community out there go through all these issues, all the areas around Vancouver. But yeah, the climate is a scary thing, and I've been ignoring problems for far too long.
I mentioned this in social, and I, you know, it's been echoed by many other people. I've lived in Vancouver my whole life. I'm not young, but I'm also, for those who are listening, probably going to say, you're not that old either.
But
I've been around the sun a few times. I don't recall weather like this happening. Like, I grew up where heavy rainfall existed, but there was a significant flood in the 90s, but I don't believe it was anywhere near the level of devastation that we experienced this year. Do recall heat waves. The heat dome it's never happened as far as I know. Yeah, ever.
But the like, forest fires have been, I think we've had 1 year off from really devastating forest fires in the last 5 years.
But that's now, it's not an unusual occurrence. They're actual occurrences.
Yeah, and I will say,
it is what we now have to plan for.
Not even to little that year off, the year off, it just wasn't quite as terrible as the other years.
It's just, yeah, I think you had said it earlier, you know, we have to, things need to change. Change is not just something that's specific to the regime here with the Vancouver Canucks. Change is much broader. You know, the world that we live in and the environment that we interact with. So I don't know what those changes can be, will be, must be. I do know that change needs to occur. Speaking of changing things up, as we wrap up the show, is there a way that we can bring ourselves back up to a better mood? Anna, with any final words of wisdom that you might have? I threw it over to you because I'm feeling.
Yeah. I tried to lift our spirits with my band, Jack the Giant tirade.
We saved that for the middle of the show, though, unfortunately.
Yeah,
should have saved for the end.
I'm really struggling with positivity. Yeah. Honestly, I will say, though, like, as much as in the broader narrative, like, things need to change, I will take so much pleasure if we beat Boston in Boston.
Just one win on the road, and that's good for you.
Honestly,
good road trip.
Yeah. Kind of sad, but true.
I actually talk about the relationship that I have with the Boston Bruins in training when I actually deliver it in my day job. And one of the things I share is that Vancouver Canucks fans hold grudges.
It's true.
So Boston is going to be and forever will be an issue. One thing I actually wanted to share is, having gone to the game and seen the in-game production like the sort of hype video at the start and the lighting effects and whatnot, Vancouver has really stepped their production up a notch. They've always had decent and good production, but it's like, it's a tier above. And if you haven't had the opportunity to witness it in person, when you feel comfortable and can do so, I think you'll be equally as impressed as I was. It's one thing to see the videos on YouTube and on TV and what have you. It's another experience being there.
Yeah, I will say it is pretty cool thing. And honestly, Canucks like have such an opportunity this year to at least get that part of it right. They just need to make the in-game entertainment a sort of joined up thing, so it's not just cool effects, but like the whole experience of being in an arena. Yeah. And I do think
they're trying
and it's getting better, so
yeah,
it's good.
If you have some thoughts on anything that we've said here, anything that we didn't say, or you have answers to whether or not human or human-like mascots need to be banned from the face of the planet, you want to let us know by joining the C4 Discord, discord.io/C4podcast, or you could shoot us a note on Twitter at the C4 podcast or on Facebook, facebook.com/C4podcast. If you want to hit us directly, at Lifeforce is me and at E4603 is Anna. But you can also find us online at C4podcast.com and CanucksHockeyBlog.com, as we have always been there. So on behalf of Anna, myself, Chris, signing off with those magical words of we out.